Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Life Coach Radio Network. I'm David Frank Gomes, and thanks for joining me on Frank Talk, a conversation about the art and science of a happy, meaningful life. I am a co-active Life Compass coach and spiritual mentor, and I was trained by master coaches from the Coaches Training Institute. If you'd like to know more about me and my process, you can visit my website at lifecompasscoaching.ca. So let's get into it. When patterns are broken, new worlds emerge. So what is the simple truth about the key ingredients that allows a new world to emerge for you? Habits. And we are specifically speaking about habits that support us rather than habits that defeat us. And to develop supportive habits, we need to cement them into place until they are secure. So a lot of people believe that inspiration or the big idea is the key to their success. Like if they can just discover it, they'll get what they want. But I, in fact, would offer that it's not the case. We are what we repeatedly do. So happiness is not a big idea, but a habit. So how to begin the beginning? Is there a prescription to change a bad habit or develop a new one? Unfortunately, no magic pills, but there is a framework I can tell you about for understanding the mechanics of habits. And let's face it, some habits are easier to change and leave behind than others. Some we may have to do battle with for a long time. But we can experiment with habits and find strategies and techniques that will help us establish new patterns that over time will, in fact, change our lives. So here's the framework. Step one is just to identify the routine. And just so we have a reminder, a habit is a choice that we deliberately make at some point and then stop thinking about, but continue doing, often every day. Put another way, a habit is a formula our brain automatically follows. We create a loop. So this neurological loop is at the core of every habit, and it's a loop that consists of three simple ingredients: a trigger, a routine, and a reward. So the trigger is the cue, you could say. The routine is the habit itself, and the reward is what we perceive to be the benefit. And that loop over time creates a groove in our consciousness, if you will, and like a needle on a record that's played over and over again in your brain. And that creates a deep habit. Later on, we might describe it as a rut or an addiction, which is really just a very deep groove in our consciousness. So to modify a behavior, you have to figure out the key ingredients that make up the neurological loop for your particular habit. It's like a recipe, and you need to figure out the ingredients. And once you've figured out the ingredients, then you can start modifying the recipe to make it taste the way you want, i.e., create a new habit. So let's just identify kind of a mock routine here. Let's say you work from home and every day you like to take a break in the afternoon. Maybe you walk to the local coffee shop, you have a cup of coffee and a double-baked chocolate almond croissant. And they know you at the coffee shop. It's a chance to catch up and chat and hang out with your pals. And let's say that over the course of a few months you've put on a few extra pounds from this croissant routine, and you know this because your favorite outfit doesn't fit anymore. And so you're suddenly thinking, my God, I've got to change this habit. I mean, this is serious. But the afternoon rolls around, maybe you had a stressful day, and you go to the coffee shop and you succumb to the croissant again. So eating it feels wonderful, and then the guilt sets in and you say, tomorrow it'll be different. You get the idea. So now we have to diagnose the habit. So we identify the routine. In the croissant scenario, the routine is the obvious. You go to the coffee shop every day, buy the croissant, and eat it while you hang out with your pals. What's less obvious might be, what's the trigger for this routine? Low blood sugar? Are you starving? Are you bored? Maybe you just need a break. Maybe you're lonely. Maybe you're tired. Maybe you don't like your job anymore. And what's the reward? Is it the snack? Or is it getting out of the house? Is it the chance to forget work for a moment and relax? Is it socializing with your buddies at the coffee shop? Or is it the burst of energy that comes from the delightful and sinful combination of butter and sugar? So to figure this out, you kind of have to become like Sherlock Holmes. You know, you have to become a habit detective. So we've identified the routine. The second step is to experiment with the rewards. Rewards are powerful because they satisfy cravings, but we're often not conscious of the cravings that drive our behaviors. And most cravings are like this. They're obvious in retrospect, but incredibly hard to see when they're under our sway, when we're under their sway. So, for example, let's take somebody who is addicted to alcohol and wants to stop drinking. Now, do people drink because they want to get intoxicated? Is that the reward? In fact, studies have shown it's very often not at all. The reward is hidden. So it may be that they actually drink because they feel lonely, or they want to forget about something, or maybe they want to numb themselves from a pain they're feeling. Or maybe they're very shy and alcohol gives them a voice. So in fact, they're not using it at all for what we might consider the obvious reward to get intoxicated. And this is important to know what the true underlying reason or craving is when we do something. So to figure out which cravings are driving particular habits, it's useful to experiment with different rewards. So this might take a few days or weeks or maybe even longer. And during that period, you shouldn't feel like there's any pressure. You don't have to make any real change yet. What we're doing in this first stage is we're just shining the light of awareness on your neurological loop. You could say we're gathering the evidence to make your case. So, you know, Sherlock Holmes doesn't solve the case on the first day. So on the first day of your experiment, when you feel the urge to go to the coffee shop and buy the croissant, you would adjust your routine so it delivers different rewards for you. So maybe instead of going to the coffee shop, you might go to the gym and come back from your workout and not eat anything. The next day you might go to the coffee shop, buy the croissant, but eat it at home without any socializing. The next day you might buy an apple instead of a croissant and eat it and socialize. You know, you get the idea. And the important thing here is to test different hypotheses, not what you necessarily replace it with. That doesn't matter. It's just that you are trying to get to the real reward or craving that you're after. So is it the sweet itself or a break from work? If it's the croissant, is it because you're hungry? In which case the apple should work just as well. Or is it because you want a burst of energy? And so the workout at the gym might provide that, or deep breathing or yoga. Or are you wandering up to the coffee shop as an excuse to socialize? So the croissant has just become a prop. You know, if that was the case, you could just call somebody up on the phone and talk to them. Or if you wanted a prop, you could, you know, buy a hand squeezer. I don't know what they call those things. And use time to exercise your wrist. The key is when you experiment with different rewards, you can isolate what you're actually craving, which is essential in redesigning the habit. So we've identified the routine, experimented with the rewards. Step three is to isolate the trigger. And the reason why it's so hard to identify the cues that trigger our habits is because there's often just too much information bombarding us as our behaviors unfold in our daily life. In fact, sometimes our behaviors are so embedded in our daily routines, we don't even question why we do things. We almost become like like robots. You know, you can even ask yourself, why do I do a certain thing at a certain time every day? So why do you eat breakfast every day at 7:30? You know, is it because you did it as a kid? Is it because somebody told you breakfast is the most important meal of the day and you should eat it? Is it because you eat it when everybody else eats it? Or is it because you're actually hungry? And here's the thing. It turns out the research says that almost all triggers, habitual triggers, fit into five categories, which is location, or time, or emotional state, or other people, or what just happened before. So if you're trying to figure out the trigger for what's going to the coffee shop and buying the croissant habit is, you write down the five categories. So the first category is location. So where are you? Let's say you're sitting at your desk. Time. What time is it? Okay. Let's say the first day you do the test is 3:36. What's your emotional state? Let's say it's angry. Who else is around? The dog. What just happened just before you went to do the habit? Oh, the dog ate my shoes. The next day, let's say, where are you? Location. You're at the post office now. What time is it? 3:20. Emotional state? Oh, you're happy today. Who else is around? The clerk. What happened just before the habit? Oh, I got a phone call saying my package was ready. Day three, let's say you're, where are you? You're at your client's office. What time is it? 3:41. What's your emotional state? You're excited. You just pitched a project. Who else is around? Nobody. You're in the elevator. What just happened before? I shook hands and said goodbye to a happy client. So you do this sort of habit journaling, if you will, where you start to really notice, and it'll get really clear which one of those categories your habit is fitting into. Now, habits are sloppy, so sometimes it might fit into a couple of categories, but one will generally stand out, which is another clue. So in this case, let's say the reward was probably a temporary distraction, the kind that comes from gossiping, say, with a pal at the coffee shop, and the habit is triggered by time. It happens between 3 and 4 when the urge comes to get a break. Because none of the other categories really match up. The location's different, the emotional state's different, other people are different, what just happened before is different. So that's important. We've identified that. We've isolated the trigger now. And then the last step is just to have a strategy. So once you've figured out your habit loop, you've identified the real reward driving your behavior, the cue that triggers it, and the routine itself, you can begin to modify the behavior. And at this point, you need a strategy or a plan. So just a reminder, a habit is a choice that we deliberately make at some point and then stop thinking about, but continue doing, often every day. Put another way, a habit is a formula our brain automatically follows. We create a loop or a groove. A trigger will lead to a routine in order to get a reward. So, to re-engineer this formula, we need to begin making conscious choices. And the easiest way to do this, according to study after study, is to have a plan, or we might call it an implementation intention. So let's say we have a plan for this croissant habit, and we write it out. At roughly 3:30 every day, I will eat an apple first before I go to the coffee shop, so I will be full, so I won't eat a croissant. And to make sure I remember this, I'll put an apple on my desk in the morning. And you could write out and create multiple strategies for yourself. And included in those strategies, I always recommend that you give yourself a free day. So on a free day, you don't have to do anything any old way. You can go and eat a croissant or eat two or three. Free days, they're like a release principle. They release a little steam as you're trying to create something new. So now, I know people are probably saying, oh, this sounds complicated or a lot of work, but it's really not. It's just as much work to beat yourself up every day because you're not doing what you want to do, or you're doing something you don't want to do anymore, but you can't stop. And that takes a lot of energy in your own head. And sometimes you're going to have to experiment and you're going to fail. That's okay. You have to see habit modification as a long-term strategy, just like diet. Why don't they work? Why do people diet and they fail over and over again? Because they're not long-term strategies. They're actually short-term stopgaps. They're not sustainable because they focus on the wrong problem. So a long-term strategy would be a healthy diet and an exercise regime that is also hooked up to a value you have, which is, say, the value of health. That's habit modification. It's sustainable. So once you understand how habits operate, once you diagnose the true trigger, the routine, and the true reward, you gain power over your habits. And you actually, at that point, can keep the trigger and the reward. You just change the routines. So I'd also like to offer some additional ingredients I think are very helpful ways to create new habits. And I'll have some time at the end of this for some calls. So from the habit of beginning, form the habit of beginning. I'm going to suggest that the reason most people fail at creating new habits and sticking to them is they don't keep doing them long enough in the beginning, which I call the incubation phase of creating a new habit. So what's the solution? You have to find any way possible not to give up for 90 days. So whether it's about creating a new exercise plan or eating a more healthy diet or literally any habit, the key that unlocks the door to habit modification is just doing it for some time each day. Repetition and regularity. You want to form the habit of running? Lace up your shoes and get out the door, even if it's only for a minute. If the habit of writing is what you wish to acquire, just sit down and start typing, even if it's only for a minute. If you form the habit of beginning, things will start to improve for you in ways that are unimaginable. And the added benefit is it just feels great to finally do the thing you say you want to do. Resistance training, the habit of starting, easier said than done. Okay, so what happens when you wake up and you don't feel like doing your morning run because it's raining? And I live in Vancouver, so that's a pretty normal scenario. Perhaps we should analyze why you don't feel like starting. And it's usually for a simple reason that you're comfortable with what you know, and the new habit is less comfortable. So we tend to cling to the well-worn ruts of comfortable behavior. But in actual fact, this is good news. It tells us that you've developed a habit of not starting anything, which means you're already really good at developing habits. You've just developed a habit that isn't serving you. So a simple strategy is to find a way to make the new behavior or the new habit more comfortable than the old one. And then it's easier to get started. So you have to get creative there and figure that out for yourself, how to make it more comfortable. Preparation is a great one. I recommend that people prepare everything they need to do before the task, if it's possible. So if you need, let's say, equipment or gear of some kind, you get it ready then beforehand. So let's use running again as an example. You want to develop an early morning running regime. So the night before, you lay out all your running gear by the bed, your shoes, everything else you need, so that when you wake up in the morning, it's all ready to go, maybe along with a motivational quote that you've tucked into your shoes. So when it's time to begin, you roll out of bed, everything is set up, so there's just a little less resistance in you to actually start. Accountability, big, huge, huge piece here. Tell somebody. Perhaps your coach, you're going to do the habit for 90 days. I find accountability motivates people in the most magical ways when there's somebody there you've said you're going to do something for. So in my practice, I use technology to help my clients. We use things like metric tools, which they can use to actively monitor new behaviors, and clients can track the progress each day. And if they're feeling like excuses are coming up, then I'm there for them to help them through the resistance. And sometimes if clients are starting a new habit, I'll sometimes make them call me at the time to say they're going to do it, just to check in or provide me with a daily feedback to create this new loop. So accountability is a big piece of it. Kindergarten. I always suggest you begin your new habits with the simplest or easiest version of the habit. So let's say you want to start a meditation practice. You don't have to sign up for a weekend, you know, Buddhist intensive where you're going to be meditating 14 hours a day and, you know, the meals are one grain of rice all weekend. That's not going to be a sustainable way for you to create a lifelong meditation habit. So we might start with a minute a day and make it so easy you can't fail. And then a minute becomes two, then two becomes three, and you get the idea. So you focused on the smallest thing overcoming the large idea, which is, oh, meditation, I can't do that. That's the resistance in your own head. So we build on the small successes by making it impossible to fail. Another super critical ingredient, the pleasure principle, it's the fertilizer that makes habits come to life. You have to find a way to make it pleasurable. If it becomes drudgery or mechanical, then people just, they don't continue with things. That actually could really change their lives for the better. And you have to find ways to keep it fun. And don't step over the small stuff. You know, I encourage people, celebrate the smallest wins you have. The smallest. That stuff matters. And over time, small stuff becomes big. Again, it's why you need a champion in your life, or a group, or support somewhere to help you as you're developing a new habit. You probably heard this from your grandmother or mother, you know, the company you keep. And when it comes to habits, it's true. You can't cultivate good habits in total isolation. The beginnings of things are so delicate. And so, for example, if you decide you want to quit smoking and start a fitness plan, would you spend your time at the bar with your smoking and drinking buddies, although they might be fun, or would you be better off hanging out with non-smokers who work out and eat well? Would you hire a personal coach or a lawyer? You need the right people around you who can help you succeed, not the people who keep you stuck. Groove. Each of your habits is creating a specific groove or a pathway, a neurological pathway in your brain. And these patterns make you behave in a certain way, often against your own wishes. So your life follows these grooves that you yourself have created in your brain. And in that sense, you're not a free person. You're more or less a victim of the habits that you formed. So depending on how set those patterns are, to some degree, we're all puppets of our habits. But you can neutralize the dictates of these bad habits. And how do you do it? By creating the brain patterns of opposite good habits. So I use a garden analogy often. In the beginning, growing a good habit is like planting a new seed. It's when the habit plant, if you will, is most susceptible to the disease of negativity or the, you know, it's impossible to change syndrome. And your mind is continually planting seeds of assumptions and beliefs. So you plant a seed thought and it grows. And if you plant a negative seed thought, you can't get a positive outcome any more than you can, you know, plant an orange tree and get grapes. So your thoughts and feelings and actions are the seeds you plant every moment. And the results you're getting in your life right now are pointing to the seeds you've planted in your past. So it's up to you to decide if you're happy with your garden. And if you're not, then, you know, creating new habits is kind of like weeding the garden of your life. The three R's, react, respond, and receive. Reactions are always instinctive, whereas a response is conscious. So in the moment of temptation, let's say, to partake in an old behavior, see if you can stop yourself for a minute before you decide to do anything. So you just take 60 seconds to respond rather than react to the craving. And ask yourself, what will I get if I give in? I'll get, you know, the taste of a chocolate croissant. What will I receive if I am strong? When you realize the gift you'll receive from not giving in at the moment, what that is for you, you're hooking up to a deeper value, being honored. Maybe it's the value of health. So if you really want to make fundamental changes in your life, you need to hook up to your deepest values. And you honor your values when you respond rather than react. So it's like the 60-second moment of reflection. And sometimes you're going to do the thing anyway. You're going to have the croissant. So the idea is not to beat yourself up, but it's just to get in the habit of contemplating, what am I getting if I do this thing, and what am I getting if I don't do it? And finally, this is a phrase that I love, and I carry it with me wherever I go. Nevertheless, I am willing. So I am willing is a very potent statement, and it's a way you can take a stand for yourself. It signifies that right here, right now, you are using your own volition, your own will to succeed in this very moment. You are choosing to say yes to your highest needs. And nevertheless, that means despite a situation or circumstance. So to put nevertheless in front of I am willing means that even with my doubts and my negative self-talk telling me I can't change, I am saying yes to my life's adventure. I am willing. So I'm going to suggest right now you take a piece of paper and you write down, nevertheless, I am willing on it. And you carry it with you for the next, 3 days, a week. And if you find yourself faltering anywhere or engaging in a habit you want to stop, you pull it out. Just read it to yourself. Nevertheless, I am willing. And see how it changes you. Nevertheless, I am willing not to eat this croissant today. See how it changes your energy. So we've had a very patient caller here, so let's see if they're still on the line here. Hey, hi, are you there?
Yes, I'm actually just listening to you, and you have some great tips. I like it.
Okay, so you didn't have a question?
No, sir.
Okay, thanks. So if folks have a question about habits, or this would be the time, but since I like to keep things short and sweet, I'm going to end with a simple story that I think really sums up what I've been talking about. There was a wealthy king whose son was the crown prince, and he was being groomed to become the king. But this prince had developed some very, very bad habits, and the king was concerned. So he called in his wisest spiritual advisor and tasked him with curing his son of bad habits. Now the wise sage took the prince for a stroll, didn't talk about habits at all, took him through the breathtaking palace gardens, these magnificent gardens. And stopping suddenly, he asked the boy to pull out a tiny little weed by the side of the path. And the prince held the little weed between his thumb and his forefinger, and he pulled it out easily. And they continued on their walk until again the wise sage asked him to pull out a slightly bigger plant that was there in one of the gardens. And the young prince didn't know what he was why I was doing this, but he pulled hard and the plant came out, you know, roots and all, actually. And then the wise man pointed to a rose bush, quite a large one, and said, now pull that one out. And so the prince had to use all his strength. He was a young man and he was strong, but it took him a while to pull it out. And he got quite dirty and sweaty, and he was starting to get a little annoyed. He started to think maybe the old sage was either senile or perhaps he just hated gardens. And then finally the sage pointed to a beautiful guava tree and said, pull that one out. And the prince was exhausted at this point. He just sat down, leaned against the tree, and he said, it's impossible, old man. I would need 100 men to pull this out. And the sage said to him, so it is with bad habits. When they are young, it is much easier to pull them out. But when they grow deep roots, they are much more difficult to pull out. So, confront the difficult while it is still easy. Accomplish the great task by a series of small acts. That's what it says in the Tao Te Ching. And if you want your habits, your new habits that you're trying to develop to stick, you'll want to have them hooked up to a very deep value you have that you can use to carry through in the moments of turmoil. The habits that stick are always the habits that are hooked up to something that really means something to us in our own lives. And if you're battling a habit that is deeply rooted in your life and you want to grow a new one that supports you and nurtures you, I invite you to contact me about my 90-day habit reprogramming coaching. And I can tell you that having a coach in your life will give you accountability. It will give you support and tools to actually give you the best chance to grow a new habit in what I refer to as the delicate first 90-day phase, when you're really trying to make that habit stick. So we all have bad habits that we want to change. I want you to just imagine one habit that you have been battling with for a long time. And I want you to imagine that you now have the opportunity to be free of it forever. What would that be worth to you? Habits, when they don't support us, are very detrimental to our happiness. And they are a critical component of sustainable happiness. So I hope you've enjoyed the show. And I hope you've got a little more understanding about habits and maybe some simple techniques you can take away with you to use and see how they work. And I invite you to join me in 2 weeks' time for my next show, which is going to be on how meditation changes your brain. So my website, again, is lifecompasscoaching.ca. My name is David Frank Gomes, and I want to thank you for joining me on Life Coach Radio Network and Frank Talk. And I will talk to you in a couple of weeks. Thank you. Good night.